Hey, readers and listeners, it's Carrie. Today's episode of Go Your Own YA was actually recorded a few months ago. It's one of the first episodes we ever did, and it shows. There were technical difficulties on my end pretty much the whole way through, but Marie and I had so much fun recording this one. We really wanted to share it with you anyway. So here you go. I hope you enjoy it.
Okay, hang on a second. I just got a very important message.
Read it on air. So Carrie and I both belong to cults. I belong to A Camp and Carrie belongs to Theme Music. We both talk about them. I'm not sure if we quite understand what's going on with the other, but we're both really happy that the other has this in their life. Yay!
Oh, this is so good. Oh my God.
Yay!
Oh, no. Also, what about my song?
Oh.
Okay. Oh my God.
There are so many emotions happening right now.
I'm very excited.
Talking about young adult literature is not for the faint of heart. There's fashion atrocities, queer subtext, problematic love interests, and that's just for a start. But never fear, because Carrie and Marie are here, and this is Go Your Own Why.
Readers and listeners, welcome to Go Your Own YA, a podcast about the young adult literature you never knew you loved. I'm Carrie.
And I'm Marie.
Marie, why are you qualified to be here and talk about YA lit with me?
I'm not, but I pretend I am.
You do a really good job. It's very convincing.
I was always really good at playing pretend.
Do you wear a special dress-up costume when you are a YA lit critic?
Well, right now I'm hanging around in a t-shirt and underwear, which I understand is the, like, outfit of many an author. So, yeah.
That's mostly how I dressed when I was writing both of my books, neither of which have been published, but both of which were written in t-shirts and underwear.
So the guiding factor is no pants. Be an author, don't wear pants.
I think no pants is just a general good rule. Pants are terrible. Find a way to live your life without pants.
This is a very good lead-in for the book we're doing today. But Carrie, first, tell us why you're qualified to talk about young adult literature.
I just said I wrote two books and I didn't wear pants while I did it. Bam!
Okay, yeah, no, you are totes qualified. So Carrie and I did something very interesting this week because Matthew Roth, I don't know what you did. I can't find a copy of this book anywhere in New York City.
Yeah, I needed to order this, especially from a far away suburb, so I could get it via interlibrary loan.
Now, there are several dozen NYPL libraries, and not quite the same number, but quite a few Brooklyn public libraries. There are only two copies of this book in the system.
Yeah, I would love to hear from Matthew about how he pissed off all the librarians.
Like what happened? It's okay. You can tell us.
We want to know. We're sympathetic people for the most part.
So since I wasn't able to get my hands on a copy, I read Yom Kippur Gogo, which is a memoir by Matthew Roth, and Carrie read Nevermind the Goldbergs, which was his debut piece of fiction.
Should we each give a summary of what we read?
Absolutely.
So Nevermind the Goldbergs is a book about Hava Aronson, who is an Orthodox Jew who lives in New York and ends up the summer before her senior year in high school going to Hollywood and starring on a sitcom called The Goldbergs. No, it's not the one that is running right now and whatever channel it is that it runs on. It's a different one about an Orthodox family. And Hava is the only Orthodox Jewish cast member. So she spends the summer in LA getting to know show business, getting to know her cast members, and making friends, making frenemies, and generally having a lot of Francesca Leo Bloch-esque experiences. and learning about what it means to be Orthodox Jewish and punk rock and just a regular teenager all at the same time.
Awesome. So Yom Kippur Agogo is about how Matthew Roth read the book Valencia by Michelle T and decided that he was going to be a slam poet in San Francisco in the early 2000s. The only problem is he's also Orthodox Jewish and is trying to reconcile the fact that he finds great beauty and meaning in his religion, but he also has many friends who break every kind of societal bond and rule that has been thrust upon them.
When did Yom Kippur Agogo come out?
Pardon me, I could pull that right up. It was published in 2005, so the same year as Nevermind the Goldbergs. It takes place over a period of approximately like 1999 to 2002.
Okay. So he might have been working on Goldbergs at about the same time. It sounds like he was exploring a lot of the same kinds of themes.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of very vivid imagery that has stuck with me from when I last read Nevermind the Goldbergs. That is something that is echoed in Yom Kippur Agogo, which is very interesting because Hava is a 17-year-old Jewish girl, and he is a 21, 22-year-old Jewish cishet man who is also kind of femme and has lots of interesting adventures around exploring gender identity and expression while maintaining the precepts of his religion, which do have a lot of meaning to him. What I remember, Hava has very similar feelings, that they both express Orthodox Jewishness as being the most punk rock of all, because you have the structure, and from within and without the structure, you make the rest of your life.
Now, you are the one who recommended this book to me. I had seen it before on the bookshelves at the library. It was very similar to your story about Born Confused, where I kept seeing this very bright cover, and it's another one from Push Books. So whoever was doing their cover design, like, knew what they were doing. Bright, like neon green with these great yellow letters over a picture of Hava, who's in black and white, except for like the hot pink streaks in her hair. I just never got around to reading it, but reading it on your recommendation, my guess was you found it via Francesca Leah Block comparisons. Am I right?
Absolutely. And he mentions Witziba and Francesca Leah Block as influences very specifically. A lot of authors who published in this period will name her as an influence.
Absolutely. Even just as someone who was reading her work at that time, I was very influenced by her and very much wanted to like figure out how to live the magical life of a Francesca Leah Block character, and I'm sure you did as well.
Yes. Matthew Roth is one of those authors who has a gift for describing the experiences that teenagers have that Sark would describe as stepping lightly from miracle to miracle. So I was particularly thinking of the scene where Hava has sort of her breaking point and runs away with her gay best friend to Shavuos in Berkeley among magical Jewish punks, which is a situation that literally happens that Matthew, in his later years in the San Francisco area, ends up moving into a house in Berkeley and hosting punk Shavuos.
I was hoping that that was based on something that had really happened. That, I think, was my favorite scene in the book. And I'm going to come right out and say that I really didn't like the book as much as I wanted to. But that scene was great. And there were other parts that I really enjoyed.
I think that you're really going to like the memoir. I find that sometimes when I don't like an author's writing as much, sometimes I'll enjoy the episodes which inspire the writing more. And this is one where, you know, I remember very much enjoying Nevermind the Goldbergs because I do like kind of a a heroine who is a little harder to get around, which Hava definitely is. And it's a theme which permeates his writing. And today, 2 hours ago, I finished his latest book, which is Rules of My Best Friend's Body. And it was, you know, just released this past spring. And it's free. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. And it deals with a lot of those themes of being not very understood and thinking you've discovered all these things in the world. But it's been tempered by, you know, the 10 to 12 years of existence between the writing of Nevermind the Goldbergs and Rules of My Best Friend's Body. And also in the interim, Matthew got married and had multiple children, which also, what I imagine, would give different perspective to these situations. So what was it about this book that didn't grab you as much as, say, Born Confused, which is a very similar kind of story?
One thing we talked about on that episode is that I identified a lot with Dimple. And now I don't want to be one of those people who says a character is not relatable to me, and therefore the character is bad, or therefore I can't get into the book. But Hava never felt three-dimensional to me. Maybe it's just that I have very little patience for people who like to prove their badassery and who talk about how punk they are all the time. I had little patience for her. I didn't find her that interesting, which is strange because looking at her description, she seems like she would be such a compelling character and one that I found a lot to love in and one that I would cheer on. And I never really felt that way. I never had a good sense of her as anything but posing and brain dumps by someone who really didn't know how teen girls work, but really wanted to write a book about teen girls. So I'm really interested to read the new book and see if with more years of maturity and experience, Matthew Roth has been able to create a character that I will find believable and three-dimensional and compelling.
So Rules of My Best Friend's Body is the narrative of a young, nerdy artist-to-be whose best friend is raped and how this affects himself, his community, and their relationship. Now, I know that this is based on something that happened in Matthew Roth's life because he mentions it in Yom Kippur A-Go-Go. The way that it's written about, I feel, is an important narrative and being inside the head of a cisgender, hetero, slightly sheltered, but in many ways shockingly average teenage boy dealing with the fact that his best friend in the world was raped. It's written in a very realistic way, and it shows how he feels about it. So I think that if sexual abuse or an instance of sexual violence is in your past, it might not be a good book to read because you're reading somebody else's process. But if you have been on his side, or if you are a teenage cisgender hetero boy, or if you really just like reading about teenagers figuring out their place in the world, it was a lot. No, but in a good way. Because I beasted through the thing in about an hour and a half. And
Wow. Have you read Fault Line by Krista Dizier?
I have not.
Okay, when you were describing this book, I immediately thought of that one because it's another one about a cishet guy coming to terms with his best female friend, possibly ex-girlfriend, I can't remember now, being assaulted. And it's from his perspective. And I've always thought that was an interesting way to take on that topic.
I do think it's an important viewpoint, but I also think that people should know. I mean, it's in the ad copy, you know what this book is going to be about, and let me confirm as somebody who read it, that is the story you are going to get, and you are going to get a teenage boy with all, you know, warts and boners and all. Yes, but as a book about being a teenager and growing into yourself and growing apart from somebody you love very much, it works incredibly well on those levels. And I felt many feelings. And Matthew Roth especially has a genius for talking about place. Rules of My Best Friend's Body takes place in Philadelphia, particularly the suburban, not so cheechy outskirts of it. And he's an author I hadn't really picked up until I thought of Nevermind the Goldbergs, but he's one, you know, I've read two of his books the past week and I'm working on a third. I am very much enjoying his writing. I'm especially enjoying his writing on religion. There are very few authors that I will sit down and read their feelings about God. And that's my own trauma. In the podcast Lizard People, the hostess and one of her guests talk about Catholicism, which neither of them really have much experience with. They say, what happens to them? They all come out so damaged. Like, you don't even know.
Yeah, I guess we should probably mention that just as we are as white as potatoes, we are as Catholic as...
the Pope taking a shit in the woods.
I was trying to think of a potato comparison.
Well, he is the Papa. Yes, you have to be careful where you put that accent mark.
Yes.
But while we are members of the Eucharistic tribe, Carrie is married into the faith, and I am from New York City. In particular, I am from Brooklyn. I know more Jewish people than probably any other demographic in my life, and it is a culture and religion and identity I have a great deal of respect for.
Yes, same here. I'll mention that my friend Scott has a charming way of describing my relationship to Judaism, and it is Jewish by injection, or for short, injection. So there you go.
It's the joke that neither of us can make. Also much nicer than my adopted child Claire calls me a matzo chaser.
Yeah, I have been accused of that as well.
I understand there's also a joke here because only Gentiles actually enjoy matzo.
No, I will disprove that right now, because my husband would like happily eat matzah until about like the third day of Passover. Then he's like, never matzah again. And then after Passover ends, you give him about 2 days. And then he's like, I'm going to eat some matzah. So.
But circling back, Matthew is somebody who converted in his late teenhood, and the journey to becoming Orthodox Jewish when he was raised Jewish, but he drifted away from it in his early teenhood. He rebelled against Hebrew school and was out the door. But then
was he raised Orthodox?
He was not raised Orthodox.
Okay.
Which is, his family's a little bit confused, but still supportive. His wife was raised Orthodox. He mentions that his blog is incredibly charming, and he is an incredibly prolific writer. He has many short stories that he publishes with a Jewish writing collective he belongs to. Definitely check it out. We'll have a link in the show notes.
Cool. I think I'm going to come away from this recording wanting to read more, even if the first book was not one that I especially liked. And I'm sorry to say that, because I know that you really enjoyed it. And maybe you can tell me about what you remember about Nevermind the Goldberg that was something that you enjoyed at the time.
The thing that I most enjoyed about the book was Hava's unwavering faith, and she considers it the most punk rock thing about herself. There's a scene where she and her best friend are having their their breakdown. Everything terrible is happening to them. And she's like, you know, fuck this, fuck that, fuck the world. And the best friend is like, fuck Shabos? And she's like, no, fuck everything but Shabos.
Can we talk about Charles?
He is definitely on the list of very bad men.
Yeah, like I wrote a jingle about the Gallery of Terrible Boys.
The Gallery of Terrible Boys!
But what I want to do for him is move it into a minor key and, like, just filter the crap out of it so it's, like, full of white noise and, like, weird sounds and just... He is the worst man of all time. And I think that's another reason that I didn't like this book, because he is treated with much more sympathy than he deserves.
I pitched an article to the Toast, may it rest in pieces, about terrible things happening to terrible men from literature, beginning with the scene of the horrible father from the Night Circus being trapped in the snow globe and being shaken by Celia every evening. And she would put him down and be like, now make sure you put all those bones back together. They didn't publish it. I can't imagine why. But yeah, no, Charles is on that list.
Now, Charles is an actor who is playing Hava's dad. And for someone who is supposed to be a father figure, he sure is interested in underage girls in a way that is extremely inappropriate.
Like, your only response to your co-star saying, hey, I can't touch you, it's against my religion, should be, yes, I agree with you, you should not have to compromise your religion, let me talk to the producers about it.
Right, that is not what happens. They have a fake hug, and it's described in these just glowing terms as like a warm and a wonderful thing. And that's kind of how Charles seems go in this book.
He's super gross. But we don't blame Hava for seeing him that way, because when you are 17 and somebody is being nice to you, sometimes they can look a lot glowier than they are in reality.
Yeah, there is no victim blaming here. I know that I have said reasons that I do not like Hava. This is not one of them. This is a reason that I disliked the book and a reason that I disliked Charles, who was a predator.
Absolutely. And I think one of the reasons I did like Hava is that she helped me kind of understand the mindset of a lot of folks that I wasn't very close with, but that I hung around with. So, you know, if you were on Staten Island, you were like normal, you were ghetto, or you were a rocker. And also, there were the nerds that I hung out with. So, but I was friends with some rockers. I'm doing finger quotes you can't see.
Yes, I can hear them. They're very good. They're very, very well done.
Thank you. And there was a lot of, I felt like of all of the rules that us as teenagers had to abide by, they had the most. And I feel that Hava is holding herself to a lot of these ideals, which is interesting because she also holds herself to her very strong religious ideals. And those bring her a lot of joy and freedom. But I think that her punker than thou attitude is not something that is serving her as much as she thinks it is. But also that would be for the sequel. I would love to see a sequel to this book.
I would too. Now, I have a question, and this is going to get into spoiler territory. And I know we've talked before about the wisdom of trying to avoid spoilers for a book that is 12 years old. But if you are the sort of person who does not want to be spoiled at all for a book that's been around for over a decade, you can skip ahead. My question for you is, do you think the show The Goldbergs is a weird secret, like Truman Show / reality show kind of thing, where Hava doesn't know that everybody else has been hired to be actors on a show that's all about testing her and seeing whether she can keep true to her religion when she's in Hollywood faced with temptation.
I think it is, but I think it's sort of a 7-Up situation where for every season they're going to have one Orthodox Jewish actor and you're going to find out about it 7 years later.
Yes.
Because there will be a documentary about all of the secret Orthodox Jewish actors.
Yes.
The fictional Goldbergs.
I waited until the end of the book so sure that we were going to get an epilogue where she found this out, and it never happened. It was winked at a little bit where she was like, well, maybe. Oh, but no. And that annoyed me because it would have been so cool to have that kind of reality show story.
Given that one of Matthew Roth's books is My First Kafka, I think that I believe that this is a headcanon that he would accept as at least fanon, like the strangeness of real life. And that, like, I feel like, you know, this is definitely a Kafka for teens kind of moment that maybe didn't make it into the final cut. Like he said in a Goodreads review, a response to a Goodreads review, that Yom Kippur Go-Go, 80 pages were cut from the manuscript. So never mind the Goldbergs is a chunky little book. So I imagine there must be even more cut out from the story. And I could see that being, you know, a storyline that didn't quite make it to the end. And David Levithan then came down from on high and said, let's leave this open-ended. So another thing I really did love about the book is Matthew Roth has such a gift for writing about music. If you love the music in Born Confused and the writing about it, this is completely different genre and experience of music, because Hava's a punk and Hava goes to punk shows, but he writes about it with the same intensity and love, and it's really beautiful to witness.
There's a great scene that hits a little close to home for me where Hava gets grilled on the street by a bunch of punk dudes who want to make sure that, like, she can hang with them. And so they start asking her about record labels, and she, of course, knows all the answers. So they ask her, like, well, who's on this record label? And she rattles off the bands. And spending a lot of time, as I do, in the classic rock world, although it's a very different scene, this conversation is one that I have had many times trying to prove my worth to gatekeeping dudes, that yes, I know my stuff and I belong here as much as you.
In his memoir, he experiences a different aspect of this because he is, in, you know, of course, very open about being Orthodox Jewish, and he's hanging around with a bunch of queer kids and a bunch of queer punks, and queer punks in San Francisco, as opposed to queer punks in Brooklyn who mostly are Jewish. And he gets interrogated, so not about his musical cred, but about his political cred. And, you know, he's made to answer for all of the sins of his fathers, which is not fair. He's only one guy. And from his memoir and from his writing, he is somebody who cares very much for his friends and what queer people in his religion go through and supporting them, and, you know, good guy. But yeah, so his cred is put to the test over his religion and identity as opposed to being a girl in punk. But I can see where he drew upon for that particular scene.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's going to be very interesting, you know, reversing it and reading the other book and seeing, like, oh, that's where that came from. Also, readers and listeners, if you do read Yom Kippur Go-Go, the formatting in the Kindle book is a little strange because it looks like the original version has sidebars with definitions of certain terms, and his footnotes are incredibly amusing. And yeah, he's a very funny writer and, you know, incredible sense of humor and almost always pointed at himself. So there really aren't jokes at anybody's expense. Now, a thing that I will have to give a heads up about is that he is inhabiting a mostly queer female and like femme cis women and trans men crew that he runs around with. And they use terms that we don't use anymore. And they have conceptualizations of identity that aren't as much in vogue anymore. And he is seeing it as somebody who is a cisgender, hetero, femme dude. So it's a historical document. Caveat emptor.
We have another book to talk about. So I think maybe we should wrap up and let's talk read-alikes and recommendations. And also I want to talk about Eitan and his song.
Absolutely. Carrie, what's your recommendation?
The one that I kept thinking of was Gingerbread by Rachel Cohn, just because it's another kind of punk character who is very much about proving herself and proving like her toughness. And as I said before, badassery. I find Sid, who's the main character of that book, and there's several books about her that Rachel Cohn wrote. I find her to be a much more sympathetic character than Hava, and just someone that I enjoyed spending time with more. I mean, your mileage may vary, but yeah, Gingerbread.
We'll probably cover it on a future episode. It's also a favorite of mine, but I haven't revisited in a few years, although I love Rachel Cohn's writing.
Me too, yeah.
She has an incredibly energetic style, also influenced by Wheatsy Bat, and also mentioned
absolutely
very often in the same breath as Wheatsy Bat. So this probably means we will have to cover Wheatsy Bat pretty soon.
Wheatsy Bat is the grandmother of all of this. So we will talk about Wheatsy Bat. Oh, the other thing I wanted to say about Gingerbread was just having an independent main character. From what I remember, there isn't too much like parental stuff going on in her world. Am I right about
that? You are absolutely correct.
She lives with her brother for a while at some point.
She takes her life in her own hands, essentially.
Yeah, that's very, very similar to Hava. So if you enjoyed that aspect of Nevermind the Goldbergs, I'd recommend Gingerbread. Marie, what's your read-alike for the week?
My read-alike is Sister Mischief by Laura Good, which I can't do any better than reading the ad copy. Listen up, you're about to get rocked by the fiercest, baddest all-girl hip-hop crew in the Twin Cities, or at least in the wealthy, white, Bible-thumping suburb of Holy Hill, Minnesota. Our heroine, Esme Rocket, aka MC Ferocious, is a Jewish lesbian lyricist. In her crew, Esme's got her BFFs Marcy, aka DJ She Storm, the butchest straight girl in town, and Tess, aka the Contessa, the pretty popular powerhouse of a vocalist. But Esme's feelings for her co-MC, Roey, MC Rohini, a beautiful, brilliant, beguiling Daisy chick, are bound to get complicated. So, as a romance, not a happy ending. As an incredible musical 90s movie spectacle of an ending, very happy ending. And also really good discussions about music and appropriation and culture. It's super fun, super energetic. A sweeter, gentler heroine, which is very interesting because she definitely tries to have her edge, but she's a tender little cinnamon roll underneath. I really enjoyed it. I think if you like Nevermind the Goldbergs, you would enjoy it as well.
My current read for the week is not a YA book. Every once in a while, I read books for grown-ups, and sometimes I even like them. And this one I really like. It's called The Weight of Sound, and it's by Peter McDade. Pete is a really wonderful writer. He was the drummer in a band called Uncle Green, also called 3 Pound Thrill, and he wrote this book based on his experiences as a musician in the 80s and 90s and trying to make it big, not so much making it big, keeping the love of music even when the music business disappoints you. I'm really enjoying it. There's a soundtrack that accompanies it. And you can find it on Spotify, or if you end up buying the book, you can get the soundtrack from the publishing company. Okay, so The Weight of Sound.
Amazing. Now, I am currently reading the book Rocket Romance by Sophia Chester, which is amazing 50s diesel punk in space. And also YA teen romances with biker girls and alien boys and a whole lot of creative world building and sweet romance. And I'm really enjoying it.
Hey, that sounds great. So readers and listeners, we've got a Facebook, we've got an Instagram, we've got a Twitter, we've got so many things that I don't know what they are because Marie handles the social media, but look for Go Your Own YA.
So
to get into it, there was a part in Yom Kippur Agogo that you sent to me highlighted. Would you like to share it with the rest of the class?
There's a scene in Yom Kippur Agogo where Matthew Roth and musician friend mention that they are harmonizing all together on all the Shabbos songs, and then they sang Dror Yikra over and over until we were stepping over each other's words, singing in a round, and then suddenly the tune matched the Beach Boys version of Sloop John B, and then so did the words. That was what they were singing.
When you read that, you asked me if I could find someone to do that, and I roped my friend Eitan Mirsky, who is a fabulous singer-songwriter, best known for singing and writing the theme songs for movies like Happiness and The Tao of Steve and American Splendor. So super talented dude. So I like to do things to him, like message him and say, hey, Eitan, can you sing this random Shabbos song to the tune of Sloop John B for me? And he says, yes. So we'll play that for you right now.
Dror Yikra Leven in bat Ve'yintzachem kimo vavad Naim shimchem ולא יושפט שבונוכו ביום שבת.
Can we get a cut of, like, just that intro and just the song to send to Matthew Roth?
Yes!
Because I would feel bad making him listen to, like, a 45-minute episode of these two girls, like, two Gentiles he's never heard of. But I do think he needs to hear that.
Yeah,
it's
two
incredible.
Annoying shiksas talking about...
Shix is talking shit.
Readers and listeners, we've told you where to find us. We hope to hear from you and tell us what you're reading and what you're loving. Until next time, I've been Carrie.
And I'm Marie. Do something good for yourself and bad for the patriarchy.